have our guest. She was with us a little less than 2 years ago, I believe. We're going to bring her back. And if I got the right thing up, here's Donna Halper. Hello, Donna.
Hey, hey, how are you?
Well, pretty good, except...
What is this frog in your throat stuff? Every guy that I know of that has a cold, the moment he has a cold, his voice drops about 4 octaves. Does that happen with you,
too? Man, I sound sultry. I am the wolf man, baby.
Ooh. Hey, the wolf man. Hey, the wolf man.
Yeah, a lot of people. It's been going around. It sounds like I'm the latest to get it, but other than that, I'm doing good.
I recommend chicken soup. It always works.
All right. Donna Halper, radio consultant, radio expert, and professor, and PhD.
All these things and more.
And you discovered Rush.
I did. It's true. And not the talk show host. People always ask me that. I was like, how did you discover the talk show host?
Yeah.
The truth is that when I was a radio consultant, which I was for 28 and a half years, and I still get to do it every now and then, but not as much as I used to, I did train a lot of talk show hosts, both righties and lefties, and, you know, people that were talking about other stuff like sports, this and that. But in this case, no, it's the rock group, and after many, many years, Rush have finally been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A lot of us worked on that for a long, long time. And I'm just so happy for them. They are the nicest people ever.
And it's appropriate because that's in Cleveland, and that's where you were at the time.
Unfortunately, though, it would have been in Cleveland last year. They rotate where they hold the ceremony.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and this year it's Los Angeles. So that's where it's all going to be.
I think the actual Hall of Fame is in Cleveland is what I meant. Absolutely. But you were at the station, the Buzzard, I think?
I was at the station from 1973, late 73 through middle of 1975. I discovered them in early 1974, and there's a picture floating around the internet of me when I was much younger, and them when they were much younger, from August of 1974 when they first made their... initial visit to Cleveland to perform, and I have a copy of the original Rush album, and, you know, I wouldn't sell that on eBay for anything. So, it's been amazing. If someone had told me back in 1974 that I would have a 38-year friendship with these guys, I would have said, yeah, right, because you know and I know, and I've said this before. I was on radio and on TV recently talking about this very thing. You and I have done a lot of favors for a lot of people and never heard from them again. And
right.
In the case of Rush, I did a favor for them that was actually part of my doing my job. I was a music director. That's what music directors do. And yet they have kept in touch. And, yeah, sure, I've done a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff for the guys that many people don't know about, and it's going to stay that way. But the fact is that the vast majority of what I did for them, I did in the first 5 years of their career. They could have forgotten about me years ago, and yet they never did. And I've been in touch with their management for many years. I've become friends with some of the members of their, you know, their road crew. They're just such good human beings, even if you don't like their music, okay? Even if you are not a rock and roller and prefer blues or country or whatever, you just like to see some nice people get ahead for once, because we hear about so many of the bad guys and the bad gals, and it's kind of just refreshing to see three people that have been nice to those around them, that are family men, that are, you know, decent guys, that don't have a reputation for trashing hotel rooms. And now they're finally in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I couldn't be happier for them.
Well, that's great. Now, I was mentioning earlier you do have a book called
Boston. I have five of them.
Oh, well, the latest one, I think, is Boston Radio 1920 to 2010. Exactly.
And I'm also working on an update. A lot of people asked me, and I'm very glad that I can do this. I had a book out in 2001, which I dearly love, called Invisible Stars, A Social History of Women in American Broadcasting. And a lot of people said, you know, the research on that kind of cut off around 2000. Boy, things have changed since then. And I said, well, yeah, in some ways I guess they did. And I had the privilege of persuading my publisher that yes, that deserves an update. So we're doing a second edition, and that is a privilege for me because this whole thing was a labor of love, much like the Boston radio book. There's an awful lot of people out there who have been totally forgotten, don't deserve to be forgotten because they've affected our lives. You do this with blues every week, Bob. I mean, there are some blues musicians who have died in total obscurity, and if it weren't for the dedicated DJs who keep playing their music, their contribution to us would be completely forgotten. So that's what I'm trying to do with Invisible Stars and doing the second edition is putting in a bunch more people whose research I've now found out about and also just kind of updating and modernizing and bringing it right up to today.
Well, you were talking about women in broadcasting. You had a little trouble getting on the air at Northeastern, I believe, because you were a woman.
Don't get me started. Don't even begin to get me started.
Thankfully, things have changed.
Yeah, it's actually a funny story. When I was growing up, well, for one thing, I was one of the only Jews in my neighborhood. I was one of only four Jews in my high school. Back in the bad old days, before there was a lot of religious tolerance, sad to say, at that time, there kind of wasn't in some quarters. And also, I was what today would be called a feminist, if you wanted to use the word. I use it proudly. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. It's equal rights for both men and women, and I was in favor of that. But back in those days, things were kind of gendered. They were sort of like men did this, women did that. And I wanted to go into radio. And I could not for the life of me see how being a woman should keep you off the radio. But back then, the only jobs women had in radio were, you know, you could do the cooking show, or, you know, maybe you could talk about fashion. And I'll be honest with you, I know how to do cooking. I've been able to, you know, support myself for many years. But it's not my passion in life. My passion in life was playing the hits and doing the news. And I couldn't see why I couldn't do that. And my hero was Arnie Ginsberg. And my other hero just died recently, Jefferson Kay. And I loved Jefferson Kay. And I loved his Hootenanny show. He used to play folk music because Boston was at the heart of the folk boom. I don't know if we're contemporaries age-wise. I've never asked you your age. Would you care to reveal it?
I was born in the Kennedy administration.
Okay, well, so
I was born in 62.
Okay, so I'm a little older than you. I was born in 47, but still young and cute. And
yes.
The baby boomers of that generation, the society wasn't quite changing yet, but it was changing about some things, and folk music was huge in Boston. You know, you could go and see a young Bob Dylan. You could go and see a young Joan Baez, Tom Rush, a lot of those people.
Club
and
47.
They, oh, God, yes. And, you know, there were, you know, Passim's and a whole bunch of other places. Paul's Mall, Sword in the Stone. There were various places all over Massachusetts where you could go and see young up-and-coming folk singers. And Jefferson Kay did a folk music show on Sunday nights on WBZ, and it was called Hootenanny. And when Jefferson was fired and he ended up on WKBW in Buffalo, I wanted to do his show. I wanted to do his show so badly. And there was just, that was kind of like the impetus for me, that and my love of Arnie Ginsberg. And my attitude had always been, you know, if Arnie with his high squeaky voice could get on the radio, the excuse about how you had to have a big deep voice to be on the radio was just nonsense. So with Arnie's success and with Jefferson leaving, it was kind of like the time is right, I'm going into radio. And I went up to my campus station. Many of you know this story, those of you that are listening that know me. I went up to my campus station, and I was like, you know, here I am, you know. And they said, you can't go on the radio. I said, why? And they said, because you're a girl. And I said, well, yeah, and what's your point? And they said, well, we don't let girls on the air. I said, why not? They said, well, girls don't sound good on the air. I said, well, how many have you had on the air? And they said, none. They don't sound good. I said, well, if you've never had any on the air, how do you know they don't sound good? But it was kind of a catch-22, and sadly, it took 4 years before I finally got the right to be on the radio. October 1968, first woman in the history of Northeastern University to be on the air. And I don't know when the first woman was on the air at Salem State, but from what I can gather from doing research, a lot of women started getting into radio finally when album rock, which in those days was called progressive or underground, started becoming popular in the mid-1960s. But not a whole lot of college stations or commercial stations had women on the air doing anything other than, quote, women's shows. There were a few exceptions. There were a few women doing the news, but very few. And so I was kind of in that era when a lot of things started to change, and I'm actually kind of proud of the fact that I maybe helped change some of it.
Yeah, that's great. It's good to think about the fact that all the advances that have been made over the years. And you were talking about progressive radio. You know, stations like WBCN, you could tune in some night and hear Muddy Waters live from Paul's Mall.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I just want to say one more thing about the whole women in broadcasting thing. For your male listeners, I have never wanted to get a job because I was a woman. I just don't want to be excluded from a job because I'm a woman.
Exactly.
And the same with the big deep voice thing. My attitude has always been, if you've got a good personality, that's what makes a successful announcer. We've talked on the boards a lot on Facebook and on Twitter and various other places about what's happened to commercial radio. And I still think that the key to commercial radio ever coming back and being successful is to be live, to be local, and to have personality DJs, personality announcers. The thing that made it for Arnie Ginsberg was not the high squeaky voice. He made it in spite of the high squeaky voice. He made it because he just was such a personality. He sounded like he was having such fun on the radio. And that's what I remember from growing up in Boston, was all the great announcers in every format who just seemed like they enjoyed being on the air. And I'd like to see a return to that.
Yeah, we'll get into briefly what's going on in some other parts of the dial in a minute, but let me give you a couple examples with us. Christmas morning, we went on the air 9 to noon live. We were playing CDs, you know, novelty songs, whatever, and we were having fun. Who else was doing that?
That's my point. That's what it's about. That's totally what it's about.
And the other example was just about, sorry to interrupt.
No, please, go ahead. No, go.
About half an hour ago, I played a song, and someone called up, and they wanted to know what it was, and I gave them the answer. First of all, how many stations play Anson Funderburg and the Rockets? Second, usually you call a station, you get an answering machine. Here, you get a person.
And that's the other thing, too. As I told you earlier, and as you know, I was a radio consultant for years. And one of the pet peeves of listeners is when they hear songs and no one tells them what the song was. There's two kinds of listeners. There's actives and there's passives. I've talked about this before. Actives are the people that radio is a foreground activity. They know the names of every song, every artist, what date it was recorded, who played guitar, all of this stuff. But they only make up about 7 to 10% of the audience. The rest of the audience thinks the Beatles are still together. Okay? I mean, seriously. And I'm not saying anything bad about them. I'm saying that radio for them is a background activity. They hear that song by Adele that you've heard so many times you think you want to upchuck. And to them, it's like, wow, is that a new song? Because they're just not paying that much attention. They know what they like, but it's not a fanatical thing for them. So, yeah, they hear a song on the air, and the DJ is probably thinking, oh, my God, if I ever hear this again, I'm jumping out a window. But there's somebody out in the audience going, wow, is that a new song? And when we can even tell them what it is or who did it or why they did it, if we know something about it, we've done them such a service. It means so much to them. That's part of personality. That's part of being a friend to the listener. Listeners love a station that makes them feel befriended. And I really want to see radio get back to doing that. And I commend you for being one of the people who does that.
Yeah. I was going to mention, you know, there are some stations that say, we play everything, and it's anything but. They have a very narrow playlist.
Oh, yeah. But the passives don't know that, okay?
Yeah.
When they hear a slogan, I've done research on this as recently as a year ago, when I was in a market. Actually, I'll be very specific because I'm no longer consulting that station. They were sold. I was in a market in Fairbanks, Alaska, okay? And I did research on a number of stations for the client that I was working for. They owned a whole bunch of stations all over Alaska. And what I found when I did research was people would quote back the slogans. It was like, oh, yeah, I like to listen to the mic because they play everything. And it was like they believed it, just like people believe that, oh, that diet pill will help me lose 50 pounds without ever having to exercise. You know, it's just amazing that people will assume that what the slogan says must have some reality to it. But I think the best thing you really can do is to live your slogan. It's not enough to just say it. I think that a good station really does live up to the things that the slogan says. And if you're going to be much more music, I would hope that you do, in fact, play much more music. Of course, it's physically impossible if you're going to do a format to play everything, because that would mean you probably would have to play the Brandenburg Concerto and, you know, then get into, you know, Take Five by Brubeck or, you know, whatever, whatever. But within the context of your playlist, I would hope that you're not just playing the same 10 songs over and over, even though, yeah, there's a place for that too. But I just think that a lot of radio fans need slogans, but I think that stations sometimes get lazy and they forget the human element.
Yeah. Well, even here like this show, I can play folk blues, soul, gospel, New Orleans, British blues, oldies, newies. I can play a lot on this show.
Did I hear you say that you played a song about radio?
Well, there's going to be a song coming up called Who Stole My Radio?
Oh, great, because before you and I got on the air, we had talked about, you know, this is a little game, a little inside baseball for the listeners here. A lot of times people will just be like, well, how many songs can you think of that have a woman's name in it? Or how many songs can you think of that are about a truck? And I was just thinking, like, how many songs are there that talk about radio? Because I love radio. I believe in radio. And I've got to believe that in all genres, radio has played a tremendous role in promoting new music. And there have to have been some blues songs written about radio. I could think of a couple, but I'm sure there's got to be more.
Yeah, the song I'm going to play is called Who Stole My Radio? And it's all about how radio isn't playing the oddball, the niche stuff anymore. That's what it's about.
Rush did a song about that, too, called Spirit of Radio.
Begin the day with a friendly voice, a companion unobtrusive.
Absolutely. Yep. One likes to believe in the freedom of music, but glittering prizes and endless compromises shatter the illusion of integrity. Yep.
And how about the lack of personality radio? I was up in Maine, and I was listening to a country station, and there was a catchy song on. Wasn't sure who did it. So I heard this woman's voice come on and go, Toby Keith. Red Solo Cup. And that's all it was. It was like pre-recorded.
I'm a robot.
Yeah.
Voice tracked.
That's what it's like.
Some other city far away.
It wasn't even her saying anything beyond that. It was just saying the title of the song, and that's it.
Well, here again, you have an opportunity. Toby Keith happens to be a pretty interesting guy. I got into a whole political discussion about Toby Keith the other day with someone, and we were having one of these amazing Facebook debates, you know, the righties versus the lefties. But we do it courteously. And there's so many things you can say about the artist that are not necessarily controversial, but are just like little pieces of his life. You know, wow, did you see him out there in such and such a city campaigning for such and such? And he supported the troops by doing blah, blah, blah. You know, but nobody does the research because they're just voice tracked. It's a shame.
Yeah. Well, there's some stations like us that will play the interesting types of music you don't hear elsewhere. Well, let's briefly mention what's going on elsewhere on the dial. What the heck is going on with all the format changes? We lost WFNX. A couple of years ago, we lost WBCN. Now we've lost 96.9.
Oh, by the way, what's their format today?
Like
the format of
the day. Classic rock.
Here. They're classic rock today. Cool.
The Bone.
Oh, are they going to be like Lithuanian gospel next?
No, not quite. What happened?
Irish polkas.
We think they're going to be going to rhythmic adult contemporary. But
Pebbles.
Urban.
Come on, they hired Pebbles.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to do. But for now, they're classic rock today. This is a stunt.
That would make so much sense. If they were urban contemporary, that would make so much sense. And I mean really urban, okay? Rap, hip-hop, et cetera.
Well, that's what they did when they changed. They were called Power 96.9 for a day.
Yep.
And then they went to Nova. Then they went to Mike 96.9. Now they're rock as, I think, the Bone. Or a classic rock that really rocks.
Yep, yep. As I said,
that's
like
a slogan I've never
format.
Heard before. Yeah.
Yep, yep. Bring back those good old slogans.
And in the meantime, all the talk hosts are gone, although, who knows, maybe Jim and Marjorie might wind up on public radio, believe it
well,
or not.
Well, they're doing a fill-in gig on Tuesday, Jim and Marjorie. They're
yep.
going to be filling in
GBH?
On WGBH.
Is it noon to 2?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I think I said 10 to noon on some of the message
now,
boards. Sorry.
They're doing noon to 2, and very nice people, seriously. Now, they'll survive. I mean, they've got other gigs. But it's a shame that there isn't a place for them in radio. I have said on more than one occasion, and I said it on WGBH when I was on Beat the Press the other night, the big problem with a lot of talk radio today is it's nothing but seething rage. And I understand a lot of people are really angry. I get that. But you can't be a one-trick pony, okay? You can't just be like wall-to-wall seething rage. Because after a while, I mean, I used to have a boss a long, long time ago when I was first getting into the industry. And he would just scream at people day in, day out. Didn't matter what you did, he would just scream at you. After a while, you started just ignoring him. It was like, oh, there's Lou again. Yep, what's he upset about this time? Whatever. And I think that's kind of what's happened to a lot of talk radio. It has just gotten so angry, so seething, so enraged. The same 10 people over and over, they don't like the president, they don't like this, they don't like that. But there's nothing new. If you listened to David Brudnoy, if you listened to Paul Sullivan, even Steve Lavelli, for heaven's sake, if you listened to those folks, yeah, they would get into the issues. They would be upset about this or that. But they did a lot more than that. They were also entertaining.
Jerry Williams.
Absolutely. Rush Limbaugh, in the early days of his career, now it's no secret that I don't agree with Mr. Limbaugh politically, but he was very entertaining, and as a radio consultant, I never consulted him, but I consulted other conservative talk show hosts, and they were entertaining. But a lot of those good folks today are no longer entertaining. They're just angry.
And talk radio is losing a lot of stations now.
Yeah, and it's losing stations, and it's losing advertisers, because a lot of advertisers are starting to feel like, wow, this is so polarizing and so angry. Do we really want our products associated with this? Where's the entertainment value? The talk show hosts that are still managing to hang on and not just sell, you know, the really scammy kind of products you hear on some of these shows, the ones that are successful, and I don't want to, you know, promote another station over yours, but let's be honest, shows like Emily Rooney and Callie Crossley on WGBH, okay, they're public, they don't need ads, but they do have corporate sponsorships. Programs like on WBZ, you have talk show hosts who are able, WBUR, Radio Boston, you have talk show hosts who are able to get into a wide variety of topics, still be courteous. They can be passionate, but they're courteous. And I think the future of talk radio, if it's going to have a future, is to get back to passionate but courteous, which is what David Brudnoy and Jerry Williams used to do. God rest both of their souls. Where's the passion and where's the courtesy for other points of view? I remember David Brudnoy talking with Ted Kennedy. Now, there's two guys.
I've called up his show and talked to David Brudnoy.
Yeah,
he was great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ted Kennedy didn't agree with David Brudnoy on much of anything, and yet they were the closest friends in real life. They really were. I mean, they were really good friends. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to being able to debate someone without feeling like you've got to squash them like a bug?
Although I will admit, Jerry Williams had a famous little on-air thing with Ted at one point.
Oh yes, he did. Yes, it was
JerryWilliams.org, if you're curious.
Yeah, Jerry could be cranky. Jerry could be cranky. Yes, he could. And so could David. David
Donna,
didn't like Hillary
there.
Clinton.
They're out
David,
there.
Oh, I know. David didn't like Hillary Clinton. He really
yeah.
didn't. And I'm sure the feeling was mutual.
Yeah.
But whatever happened to radio being entertaining? Can't
you're listening to it.
You know? Oh, well, that's my point. Where
right
is
here.
It? Where's more of it? Where's more of it?
And we've got 130 watts, but we're also on the web, of course, which reminds me, we've got a lot of stuff coming out. We've got the Boston Globe's RadioBDC.com and WFNX.com that are both going after the former WFNX audience, and there's all sorts of stuff like that.
Absolutely. And have you given your call letters recently?
WMWM Salem. I think
all
I did at the top of the hour.
Yes.
There are some people that give it every single break and all that. But.
Well, that's top, but that's part of Top 40, too.
It is.
The reason for that, as I'm sure you know, is the idea that people were tuning out, tuning in, tuning out, tuning in, and you wanted to make sure that they wrote it down in their diaries.
Well,
but
these days, that's done
electronically.
Yes, it's electronic, yeah.
Yeah, personal people meters, which, by the way, have not been real good for talk radio.
Yes.
Some of their numbers have started really sinking like a stone as a result of that. So
yeah.
What's this record you were telling me about?
What's the
radio thing you were going to play?
Well, it's called Who Stole My Radio by
right,
Shamika Copeland. Shamika, okay, let's try that again. Shamika, that's Shemekia Copeland. She's the daughter of Johnny Copeland, who was a blues singer.
Oh, yes.
Well, how about this?
Yes.
Produced by Steve Cropper.
Wow.
From Booker T and the MGs, of course.
Wow.
I saw Booker T and the MGs at the Winter Island Blues Festival, and I saw Shamika at the Winter Island Blues Festival, and this year at the Gloucester Blues Festival.
Oh, how excellent.
Again, my voice is slightly raspy, so.
you know what? You and I would notice it. The average person would not.
Yeah. There are some hosts out there. There's a sports host who sounds like this. His name is Scott Farrell, Farrell on the bench. There's a guy that sounds like that. So it's
remember
not so,
Johnny Most?
Yeah.
I am up courtside. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we used to have a guy named Gary Levitt who did a lot of impersonations, and he did a great Johnny Most.
Oh, my God. Johnny was amazing. He really was. I had the privilege of knowing him. I was never close friends with him, obviously. But when I was a kid growing up, the Boston Celtics practiced at the Hecht House, which is on American Legion Highway, in what is today on the, I think, Roslindale, Hyde Park, Mattapan line. There was a Jewish school there. There was a Sunday school. And the gym was next door in the Hecht House, and so I was supposed to be in Sunday school, but I was actually sneaking out to watch the Celtics practice, which Tommy Heinsohn and Bob Cousy and all of those good folks. I'm dating myself. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, these days, a lot of people, I hate to say a lot, but some people have tuned out to MP3 players, iPods, whatever. We got to lure them back into radio, but what they're doing at some of the other stations, that ain't going to work.
No, it's got to be live, it's got to be local, and it's got to be personality. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
People need to feel their favorite station is a friend. If you feel it's a machine, what's the point?
Yeah.
Seriously.
And we're talking about live and local. The day of Hurricane Irene, I was actually in our remote studios. We were giving all sorts of updates on what was going on, so we were helping the community.
Absolutely. That's what radio does best, and that's why I really do salute the stations that have kept that up. Kiss 108, Maddie in the Morning. How many years has Maddie been doing his thing?
About 30, I think, right?
And what I like about Maddie is he reminds me of Jess Kane. He has reinvented himself for a new generation over and over. You have young people now. I was in a coffee shop the other day, and a whole bunch of kids from Quincy High School had just gotten out. And they were sitting around, you know, beating donuts and drinking hot chocolate and yada yada, and I just walked up to them and said, I do research for a living, you know, this is not a contest, you're not going to win a thing for answering this question, but I'm really curious. There's a myth that people of your age don't listen to radio, and they were like, we listen to radio. I said, what's your favorite station? And just about every one of them said Kiss 108. So I have the feeling that, A, radio's not dead, and, B, yeah, I know it was an unscientific sample, but it's interesting that that's the first station that came to their mind, was one of the stations that plays the hits.
Yeah.
And has live personality DJs.
And there's a lot of stations that are playing the hits and playing to younger audiences now. I mean, let's face it, that's why it's called popular music.
Yep.
It's going after that audience.
Yep.
And what can you say? You know, we got to get them listening to radio and the older people as well. So,
well, I firmly believe that radio is not dead. I think it kind of killed itself off to some degree because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. I don't think it's been good for radio to have a small group of owners who put the same format on every single station.
Can you imagine if we didn't have college radio?
Oh, my God. But, I mean, cutting out the things that people like the best about radio just to save a few bucks. I mean, come on. I understand companies want to make profit. I was in business for years. I wanted to make a profit. Of course I did. But you can't cut off the things that people like. And people like personality. They like live DJs. And they like somebody that knows the community. And I don't care if you're in Detroit, Michigan, broadcasting to Boston. Okay, fine. The myth is, well, all you need is the internet and Google Maps. And no, you got to be plugged into the community. You got to know who the big players are. You got to know who the popular people are. You got to know who the, you know, what the local references are. And I don't think you can get that using, you know, Google Maps and the internet. I love the internet, and God bless Google Maps. But there's something to be said for being plugged in to the community. Maddie in the morning, God bless him, plugged into the community. Brudnoy was plugged into the community. You are plugged into the community. And the people who are doing that, they're still around and they're still successful.
Yeah. Now, let me mention once again, you've got a book called Boston Radio, 1920 to 2010. What exactly is that book all about?
And by the way, I'm still available for speaking engagements. I love going out to different places. I did a talk for the Explorers Club in Salem last year. It was standing room only. I was very pleased. We had a lot of fun talking about the history of broadcasting. Boston Radio 1920 to 2010 is a history of Boston radio in words and pictures. I'm hoping to do a second edition at some point of that as well. But right now, it just came out last year, so I'm not going to get to do a second edition just yet. But it has rare memorabilia in it, rare photos from my personal collection and others, and also a lot of information. A lot of people think Arcadia books are all like old picture books. Not true. I have pages and pages of information about the history of Boston radio. And by the way, a shout out to people like Garrett Wallman and Scott Feibusch and some of the other fine folks that do a lot of research on Boston radio. Love you. Couldn't do it without you. And it's just a lot of fun to preserve the history of this market that means so much to us. So
if people haven't
bought the book, I hope they will go out and buy it. It's still available at just about any bookstore, or you can get it from me or whatever.
Yeah, I went to one of your book signings over at Barnes & Noble in Hingham. I think Sam.
And I was glad you did.
And you had a lot of the memorabilia and everything. Sam Copper was sitting right in front of me.
Yes,
if you know
yes.
Who he is, of
we
course.
Had fun. We had fun.
Garrett was there, too.
So, you know, I just think there's so much about Boston radio that is worth remembering, and I want to make sure it gets remembered and that it gets preserved. So I was just delighted to get to do that book. I'm not going to get rich from it. You don't get rich from doing those kinds of books, but I've had a lot of fun, and I've also met a lot of people who were like, wow, I had no idea that my pick one, grandmother, uncle, whoever, was on the radio back then, or people who were just like, wow, I hadn't thought about so-and-so in ages. So it's created a lot of good memories for people. I'm glad I had the chance to do it.
Yeah. What we're going to do is, this has been about a half hour long. I'm going to podcast it. I'm going to put it up on some of the message boards and on Facebook and things. So those who missed it or want to hear it again can hear it.
Well, I hope people don't think I was boring. And
oh,
you know
no,
what?
You're never boring.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your show because people don't tune in to hear me. They tune in to hear the music, and they certainly tune in to hear you as well. But I had just been thinking this past week about all the changes in Boston radio and the different format changes and, you know, people going away who'd been around for a long time and, you know, this and that. And I just said, wow, somebody ought to be talking about this. And there used to be this wonderful, quirky little program called Let's Talk About Radio that our friend Bob Bittner used to do on WJIB. Hey, Bob, how are you? We love you. And he hasn't done the show in a while. And I just thought, wow, somebody ought to talk about radio.
On a Sunday afternoon with someone named Bob.
Absolutely. So I approached you and, asked if you'd be interested in doing it, and you were very kind, and I really do appreciate your opening up your show to me today to give me a chance to talk radio with you.
Yeah, well, that's what we did. Now, again, I'm going to go into that song in just a minute, but let's say goodbye to Donna Halper. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love you.
Yeah,
Happy New Year to you and yours.
Yep, we'll have you back on. So we're going to go into that song, and thanks, Donna Halper.
Thanks again.
Okay, bye.
Broadcast in Blues every Sunday here on WMWM since 1988. This is the Juke Joint from WMWM Salem and WMWMOnline.com.